Nine, eight, welcome to PCMC. No, I didn't want to go through the whole bit. Welcome to PCMC. Welcome to 2025. It is a new year. This is a new year episode. This is an episode actually coming out on New Year because we come out every Wednesday, and the first day of this year is a Wednesday. We're starting off on a hump day. I'm joined by my friend and yours, Nadia Cater. Nadia, how you been?
Mike, oh, good. I'm ready for this year to be over. This year kind of felt really shitty. How about
You
you?
mean 2025? You ready?
2020. Yeah, all right. Speaking to the future. So 2024 was kind of shitty. I'm looking forward to 2025. What about you?
Well, I'm worried about the upcoming
Right.
administration,
Yeah,
political
that's something to
administration.
worry. Right, that's something to worry about.
But I still have hopes that the Democrats, or what, or the, let's say, the left, will finally get rid of the whole, all the Democrats shit, and like either the Democrats will become something good, or they'll shake that off and become a true grassroots leftist movement.
So you're saying moving away from Diet Republican that we've been going for the
Yeah,
last 20
moving
years.
away from where basically this, we fund ourselves the exact same way as Republicans, but we're more left leaning on political issues, but still for the same economic inequality. Be done with that is what I'm looking for.
You know,
But
on the
yeah.
plus side though, the
Yeah.
movies have been great. Have you noticed the movies have been getting better the last few years? It's like when times get worse, entertainment gets better.
I think that's a good point. I was actually saying to someone the other day, right now there's a Star Wars show on that's really good, and there's a trailer for a new Superman movie, and that looks good. And it's like, what, how things are good right now. Wicked was great. We saw Wicked four times.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah.
So,
So maybe you're right. Yeah.
I mean, there is a, I haven't seen it yet, but I've been seeing trailers. There's a DC show, but like all the characters are like classic horror monsters.
Yeah. Creature Commandos.
Creature Commandos or something, and I'm like, this is interesting. Okay. We're trying new old things.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have hope. I don't know if that show is going to be good or not, but seeing Universal Monsters try one more time
Yeah.
is always a bonus. James Gunn seems to be doing okay with DC stuff,
James
so.
Gunn is, from what I haven't watched it, but I James Gunn is in the first episode animated as himself. So,
Wasn't he murdered in the Harley Quinn show?
oh, I don't know. I don't.
I
Oh,
think they
really?
killed. Yeah, okay, yeah. There was a storyline like Clayface was trying to get on this movie and James Gunn was the director and then they accidentally killed James Gunn so Clayface just pretends to be James Gunn.
See, that's perfect. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that show's fun.
But since it's New Year's Day and we're thinking about time and years and growing old and growing young and all that shit, we are going to talk about classic novel, The Man Who Fucked Himself. No, wait. I'm sorry. That's not the correct title. The Man Who Folded Himself from 1974, written by David Gerald. Nadia, you and I read this at the same time years ago, and I couldn't remember this week. Was it just like a book club thing? Was it like, why did we both read it at the same time? Do you remember that?
I think it was one. It was like before you were really like deep into podcasting, so it wasn't
Yeah.
for a podcast.
No, it wasn't.
I think it was more like we were just like, let's read and watch stuff together and then talk about it. So kind of like a podcast, but without any of the recording and then
Like real
aligning our
life.
schedules.
Like real
Yes.
life. Yeah, so read it years ago and then just reread it this week, and it was just as good as I remember, but it was way more queer than I remembered it. I forgot how queer the story is, and I've been doing a little bit of a deep dive on David Gerald, I think I sent you an interview with him.
Yeah, I was watching it. It's great.
He's very spry for a man who's 80. He seems really with it, right?
Yeah, he's spry. He has some really great stories.
Yeah.
So we read it actually. So for some reason, I still use Goodreads. And
Sure, me too.
the first time we read it was in 2015. That was ten like now 10 years
Wow.
ago. So this
That's
book came out.
10. I see. See, this is why we just need to stop and feel the gravity of that. I thought it was a couple years ago, right? Because as an old person, I'm always like, yeah, a couple years ago. It was 10. It was a decade ago.
We were in very different times. Like, I think that
Yeah.
was around the time that you and I, like, you had insomnia and I worked evenings. And we would just, like, be up late doing
Yeah.
weird shit because I was out all evening and you were up all night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we would, like, drive around and talk and eat diner food at, like, 1 in the morning, which.
Wow.
If I did that now, I'd wake up with such heartburn. Like I could feel my evening like thing. Like yeah, and I do you even go to bed b before 2 at like 3 a.m. anymore? Like or past 3 a.m.
I go to bed at like 11.
Yeah, that was the we were very
Wow.
different people.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was a while ago. The
But that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's about
time.
time.
Yeah, and we what's it called? So we read it 10 years ago. It's about time. Sorry, you could cut this out, but my camera just went really blurry. I don't know why.
Yeah, you're much like you're disappearing from the time stream. You are out of focus right now. People at home
I
listening can't see that you're out of focus, but perhaps they could hear it in the tenor of your voice. Oh, there you are.
I'm fading away. So yeah,
Wait, so I'm
so
going to talk about David Gerald for a second. David Gerald
yeah.
is the writer of this book. He's 80 years old. He's gay, openly gay. He wrote on the original Star Trek. And he worked on Star Trek Next Generation and actually wrote a gay character, which was Gene Roddenberry's idea, but then the studio said no. And then he had to take away the character that he wrote, which he was unhappy about. He actually wrote the Trouble with Tribbles classic episode. And he wrote this book. This book is called a novel, but it's barely a novel. It's like 130 pages or something.
I think it's one of those weird points where it's a tad too long to be a novella, but
Yeah.
too short to be a novel. So it's in a weird
Yeah.
place.
But
I mean,
only a
it's in
little bit longer
a
than a
little,
novella. It's
yeah.
basically a novella.
Well, it's in a weird place in a lot of things because, like, time travel, very classic science fiction
Yeah.
subject, but he only interacts with himself that we really see or we'll read about. Like that's
Yeah.
the whole novel is about time travel, but time travel with only within yourself and your own self-interest, which
Yeah.
is really weird.
Yeah, I had remembered it being about time travel, and it's written in 1974, so it's a sort of classic time travel text, and I had remembered it being about time travel, but it's actually more about like alternate realities, kind of like Rick and Morty is. But I would also say that it's hard sci-fi because it really leans into the scientific speculation of it. Some time travel stories don't give a shit about any kind of rules, and they try to avoid paradoxes. Like I always think about the second Austin Powers movie, where he talks about going back in time. And the I forget who it is like, ah, don't even think about it too much. Just you'll be fine. This is the opposite of that. This is like it's only paradoxes. All that this author is interested in is looking at paradoxes and trying to figure out paradoxes. And it is a little bit mind bendy, but it still feels very human.
Yes, but like, wow. I mean, when you think of the title, The Man Who Folded Himself, it almost, if you think about that, is like the folding in time, right?
Yeah.
But also I think of it as kind of thinking of it figuratively, like paper, like when you're folding,
Yeah.
making creatures out of paper, like origami or something, and it's still technically the same piece of paper, but the way you fold it and how many folds you put into
Yeah.
it completely changes the shape of
That's so
itself.
interesting. Yeah.
And this, you said it was like a classic time travel text, and it is, but I don't think I've ever read anything that's even remotely similar or taken from it. It's such an interesting read, and I've
I
always
yeah.
really liked it. But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I've heard that it's similar to Asimov. I'll be totally honest with you. I've not read any Asimov, or maybe I've read a couple of short stories. But when it comes to my sci-fi literature, I have to say that I'm behind. I haven't read any Heinlein. I've read some Philip K. Dick. I've read some Harlan Ellison. I haven't really read Ray Bradbury, maybe just a short story by him or two. But I've heard people when this came out, at least according to Wikipedia, when this came out, some critics accused it of being too derivative of, I believe, Asimov. But I've never read any of Asimov's stuff, I don't think. So to me, I think
Interesting.
it's, you know, it's I mean, classics maybe not the right word because I don't know if people really know about it. But when you do start to swirl around and think about like sci-fi of this time, this title does come up. Its title sounds a lot like a Philip K. Dick title. The Man Who Folded Himself is a very Philip K. Dick title. Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? But it's not super freaky like that. Like, his stuff is.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true. I think when you say Philip K. Dick, I would say like this might be, I'm sorry, I'm still grappling with the Asimov thing because I've read Asimov's short stories, but not his like novel length, and I don't totally see it, but it's also been a really long time, so maybe I gotta pick that up again. But when you say Philip K. Dick, I feel like this is kind of similar to Philip K. Dick. The only difference is Philip K. Dick would go down the pathway of that one version of Daniel Easton, of when he gets so lost in his own paradoxes and trying to think that out that he loses his mind. That would be where Philip K. Dick would go. He wouldn't go anywhere over here where we're at about like the philosophical and existential questions of queerness as well as time travel itself.
I'm looking back at the Wikipedia page. I'm wrong. It wasn't Asimov. They were saying Robert A. Heinlein, that they
Oh.
critics said that it was reviewing the novel 1974, Vector Christopher Priest thought that Gerald had unintentionally replicated the closed loop timelines of Robert A. Heinlein's short stories, All You Zombies and By His Bootstraps.
Okay.
So there you
Okay,
go.
that well, the thing is I haven't really read Heinlein, so
Me
I can't
neither.
even say that. All You Zombies. I feel like I read that one though, but because it's not actually about zombies. It is about time travel. I don't know why it's called. Oh my God. Okay, sorry. I'm looking this up now. And readers, read or listeners, read at home. Yeah, so All You Zombies is about paradoxes caused by time travel. Okay, I did read this. I remember this. What I also remember from Heinlein is that he's now remembered a lot for being misogynist. So,
Oh, they all were, weren't they? I mean,
yeah.
I've heard stories of Asimov like grabbing women's asses,
Oh, yeah, that was
and
disgusting.
Harlan Ellison in his stories, the women are always marginalized or they're just frivolous characters. He clearly had a disdain for women. That's
When,
the
yes,
sad part of
what,
sci-fi history.
yeah, it really was a boys' club.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Harlan Ellison, also there's a story about him that I learned when I watched. There was a documentary that came out about him, like mid-2000s, and it was actually something that they told, and Harlan Ellison admitted to, that he got into a fight with his wife, an argument, and for some reason she was naked. I guess she got out of the shower or something, and Harlan Ellison pushed her out the front door and locked her out of her house completely naked and left her there for hours. And
And
he
I'm
was
sure that's
admitting.
told as like a funny anecdote.
Yes, it is. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, that's awful. But yeah, so, and that also, I was listening to that David Gerald interview that you sent me, or, well, you know, whatever it was, monologue, where he's talking about Star Trek and how this one woman was the script supervisor because she was a woman and no one would ever give her a producer title, but she was brilliant and she wrote scripts. Right. And of course, you know, talking about misogyny and the irony here is I forgot her name.
I
But
think Dorothy Fontana,
yeah, D and her
DC
credits,
was DC
DC.
to hide gender.
Oh, it's so upsetting.
All right. So let's
Oh.
talk about what this narrative is. So the story of the man who folded himself is our protagonist is named Daniel or Danny, and he has an Uncle Jim, and Uncle Jim dies. And leaves him a time belt, basically a belt that has all these buttons on it, and you could travel in time with it. You can travel any way in time with it. You can like use it to just like watch time go, like just as an observer without actually interacting with time. It's got a like a last button, like on a remote control, where you could go right back to where you were. That's the hard sci-fi of it. Like it spends pages describing even with like drawings of like what the time belt looks like and what all the buttons do, which is not necessary really. Daniel starts to use the time belt. The sort of first thing he does is he goes ahead a day, and when he goes ahead, he meets himself a day older, and that version of him he sees is like being less nervous, and he actually starts to admire that person. And that person calls himself Don, even though it's Dan. He says, like, when I'm the whoever is the one who's ahead will be Don, and the other one will be Dan. Which made me think of The Substance, because remember in The Substance, they like their number one rule was remember you are one. Like, don't believe the illusion that you're more than one person. You are one. Because he immediately does that. He immediately starts talking about himself in the future as a completely different person. And then, he does that Back to the Future thing that Biff does. He bets on horses and he wins a lot of money. And he basically becomes, very, very rich. But then we see what just happened again the next day. And now he's Don. Right now he has to do what he just did yesterday from the other side, but he starts immediately fucking up and doing paradoxes. He goes, well, yesterday Don was wearing this jacket. What if I don't wear this jacket? What happens if I don't wear it? And he doesn't, and things turn out slightly different. He eventually realizes that, in fact, even though it seems subjectively like time travel, he's actually constantly making new timelines. Which, if remember, you and I talked about, we did an episode a long time ago on the show Future Man,
Yeah.
which I believe season three of that show was all about like that exact thing. Like the first couple of seasons, he's going back and forth in time, and then eventually he's like arrested by the time police, and they're like, "You're completely fucking up reality because you keep creating these new things." That's what this guy is doing.
Yeah, and they in Future Man they even say like, "No, idiot, you didn't stop that from happening. You just moved it. You did die." And then all the characters have to reflect on that they killed themselves inevitably multiple times. There's even this amazing scene in that third season where the three characters are running down a hallway and they're seeing versions of themselves ahead of them and realizing who, and then one of the versions realizes that they don't make it and they just like, oh shit, we're the ones that die. Because they keep seeing themselves like die. And I was like, oh my God, that's bananas. Yeah, so like in this one, Yeah, Don and Dan, and they're also seeing versions of themselves. There's one point at the racetrack where Dan is like, "I thought I saw Don leave, but then when I went back to my seat, I saw that he was there." And it turns out that he saw another version of Don that went back in time to warn Don not to do this one thing because it fucks them up.
What he does the second day, and now he's Don, and he's like, you know what, let me change things, let me try to win more money. Then an older Don comes to him and goes, no, don't do it because you're gonna get arrested, and they're gonna look into you as for what you do. Win, don't go for all the money, win less. Win a certain amount and then move on. You could get rich other ways. And what's interesting, I think one of the reasons why this book is so short is you only have like five or six actual scenes, because in between the scenes are a lot of sci-fi pontification. Like there's big jumps where, like, after he starts with, you know, fucking around in time, there's this whole like 3 pages where he's like, and I saw this and I saw that, and I met Abraham Lincoln, and I watched this, and I saw dinosaurs. And at one point he stops Christ from being born, but then he goes back to his timeline, and the world is so alien and different, and everyone speaks different languages, that he goes back and undoes it, because undoing Christ changes all of existence. But it's not religious. Like he says, Christ is just a guy, but the religion based on him has a big effect on our culture. There's just, it's,
Yeah. He also talks about, and that's the thing is like the weirdest thing is we don't actually see these scenes exactly what you said. We just hear about that narration and that someone tell, which is like a big no-no. It's basically kind of in a way exposition, but not like you're not like a rule of writing is like you shouldn't have the character telling you the reader the story, but that's a lot of this book. So it kind of breaks that rule, which is interesting. And he even talks about different realities of like seeing Abraham Lincoln get shot, stopping that, then going back and changing it again with Kennedy, the same thing. And he realizes that there are like limitations to what he can and can't do or the bigger consequences. He even talks about going to the far future and not understanding or being able to communicate. So he's like, well, I could only travel within this period.
He says basically, like, really, he could only, like, because of everything about him, he could only, and his language, he could only be around like a couple hundred years.
But even then, it's a plaything. And you and I had this conversation through text, which is that what is the theme like? You said it was solipsism, and I said it was narcissism. And I don't think we're wrong. Either one person's wrong or one person's right. But kind of that's kind of what hit me of like why it's one my argument why it's a book about narcissism is one of the themes is because all those things that happen, it doesn't matter, but what happens with himself? And that's his main focus. Even if he saw those things, it's almost like they weren't real to him. Which I mean, I guess that's your argument of solipsism of like it's
All of
the world
existence
is,
is in his subject.
yeah, but it's like his play, the world is his plaything.
I just want to. I don't want to read too much, but there are some interesting passages that I wrote down. He says, therefore, paradoxes are impossible, because if paradoxes were possible, then time travel would have to be impossible. Otherwise, we'd have people killing their grandfathers right and left. We'd have people seducing their mothers or kidnapping their fathers. We'd have time travelers killing the inventors of time machines. We'd have all manner of anachronisms and flukes, and the laws of nature would be violated, and in so many different ways. It would take the invention of a whole new science to catalog them all, but time travel is possible. So, like, there's a lot of paragraphs like that where it's like it's almost dizzying. It's also very postmodern, like in like the real academic sense of postmodernism. Like the postmodern subject is becomes meaningless. It kind of also goes into simulation and simulacra. Like if once you make a copy of a copy, the original is lost, which happens in this, because this is written like a diary or a journal. And at some point towards the middle, one of the Dans says, "You know what? I've come to this conclusion. I'm God." And then it cuts to another Dan writing, and they're like, "Yeah, so that Dan was put into, we put them into a mental hospital, and we took away his time belt because he's just going to cause trouble." And that's when I realized, oh shit, like I was assuming that I was always reading the same Dan, but it's possible that you're actually reading a bunch of different versions of him writing in this journal. So that's what happens is it becomes less about time travel. It becomes a lot about he only spends time with himself. Which is the narcissism, like you said. Like he has a poker game that exists at one time and place, and he can go back to it his whole life. And it kind of goes on for weeks on an end. And there's old Dons and young Dons and Dans and Dons, and then there's all different kinds of Dans and Dons. And if he ever wants to like kind of refocus himself, he goes back to the poker game and sees the others. And this is where it gets really perverse, right? Which is like what I totally forgot about this, which is he starts to fuck other Dans.
And be fucked. So like
And
that's
be
the
fucked.
thing too. It's like, where does it start? That's where it gets kind of like really mind loopy of like, because the poker game is at this party and different Dans come and go, and it's like, yeah, and it seems like, and he even writes at one point, is like, at one point it's like we play as long as we can until people get tired, and then another Dan, one Dan leaves, another Dan replaces him. But then there's this like scene at that party where he's with Don. So that's the person that's like one day ahead. And Don tells him about, and there's this like weird attraction towards them. And Don talks to him about, well, this is something we're going to do
Like
because
you,
he
I want
already
to give you the
experienced it.
chance, right? Because the book, he there's something that called excising, which is if you fuck up or you want to undo something you do, you have to go back and stop yourself from doing it, which is called excising. So he's like flirting with his other version of himself. And then an older version of himself pops in and he's like, "Hi, I want to show you my diary. I just want you to read it." And he reads it and it's an account of him fucking himself, him fucking another version of himself. And he's like, "I just want to give you the chance. We can either excise it or you can go ahead and do it." And he does it and he talks about it as being like amazing, like such happiness, such bliss. It's really, but it's so perverse. It's not perverse in its queerness or in its gayness, I should say. It's perverse in its, like, I guess, solipsism. It's perverse in its incest, but it's even more than incest. He even says, he makes a joke, it's basically like masturbation. But he talks about there are orgies of all versions of him, all fucking and sucking themselves. And it's wild. It's wild.
It's wild because it's detailed in the sense of intimacy, but also not that detailed. And like, you're not actually like the way they're describing his own body and sleeping with himself, which is himself. But there's nothing graphically sexual, which is really interesting. And that part you talked about of like Don giving Dan the diary, the narration keeps going. So like that's when you also that ties into what you were saying before. It's like the narration goes into as if it's just a continuation of the story, and then there's a part in the book where it's like, and then I stopped reading or something. So it's like we were in that diary or of that person, and then we were taken into the Dan that read the diary before actually. See, this is where it's getting nutty.
Yeah, it's hard. It's definitely a dense text for something that's so short. It's a dense text. I'm just looking through the book. He becomes sort of more unmoored from reality as time goes on. He talks about how he doesn't live the way we all live. He's like, "I don't live, if I'm tired, I go to a place in time where it's sunny. Oh, sorry, if I'm tired, I go to a place where it's dark and sleep. If I'm awake and don't want to sleep, I go to a place where it's sunny." Like he's like, "I don't live in a straight line. The idea of a day doesn't mean anything to me." There's a part later on where it's very perverse, where he talks about like the parties sort of grow and like there's like different rooms in the parties, and there's like a room for like the oldest versions of him. And he talks about them as being like gross, lecherous old mans that just want to like fuck the younger versions of him.
Which
It's.
again, the substance reference is so
Oh,
interesting.
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Which, yeah, I'm like, oh,
Although
that kind of
substance
feels
does
bad.
not go there. Like that would be, that's the one place the substance doesn't go, which is Demi Moore doesn't fuck Margot Qualley.
No, but she, Demi Moore is like aging and
Yeah.
becoming more and more grotesque.
Oh
And
yes, absolutely.
yeah, and it's that makeup, by the way, was amazing. But so
Yeah.
like, but in The Man Who Holds It Himself, which is so interesting, it's like the young Dans are repulsed, and the whoever is narrating, which whatever versions of Dan we're reading, is repulsed by the older ones. And it's
Yes.
like, but you know that's you, but you're also treating them as something different. And then it gets to a point of where older Dan realizes that he becomes that Dan. And he goes to spend time with those Dans.
Yeah.
And the sex scene also kind of was reminiscent of other texts, queer texts I've read, of when an older gay man will kind of initiate a younger one. And so what's interesting is now in this time period, like those age gap things, there's a lot more tabooism to that, of like an older person's taking advantage of a younger one. But up until relatively recently, that was seen as that was normalized, right? Because it was of course it's sex, but it's also like a mentorship, and that's kind of exactly what happens in that, is like Don mentors Dan to a certain point, but then eventually he stops meeting Don's, and it's almost like that's the
There's
aging
a weird,
process.
yeah, I didn't totally get that. There's a point in his existence where he says, "I'm very lonely. I don't see a lot of me around anymore," which
That,
I'm
yeah.
guessing other versions of himself excise themselves.
Yes, and that the first okay, so I read this 3 times. So I read it the first time with you. I read it again 4 years later in 2019. See, thanks, Goodreads. And then I read it for this podcast. So like this time reading it, I finally understood that. Is like he keeps excising himself to a point of where then they can't visit each other because those versions stop existing. And so even going back to the party, there's less and less Dans because all different versions of Dans are changing their behavior and their patterns, and in essence, eliminating those paradoxes.
Yeah. I just found this great passage from when he starts engaging in the sex. So this is love, the giving, the taking, the abandonment of roles, the opening of the self, the resultant sensuality of it all, the delight, the laughing joy. Were I to describe in clinical detail for some unknown reader those things that we have actually done, the intensity and pleasure would not come through. The joy would be filtered out. The written paragraphs would become grotesque, perverse, which is, it's great in that it's what it's not saying is saying everything. But then he gets to, I'm trying to remember how. Okay, yeah, he gets to a point where he's lonely, right? There's less of him around, and he goes, "I'm gonna go back far. I'm gonna go. If there's other Dans out there, I got to think of a time where they would go where I would go so I could meet them." And he goes, "How about my birth? I could go to my birthday, the time of my birth, and to the place of my birth." And he goes, and the hospital's not there. Because at one point, the Don we're reading excises himself, which is the perfect, Jean Baudrillard simulation simulacra. Like, the original's gone now, right? He goes, so the hospital's not there. She's like, "Fuck." So then he goes, "Okay, I'll go back 100 years in the same exact spot." And he goes and he meets Diane, who is a female version of him. And then they have a love story, and they're more than fucking, they're like in love.
That was wild.
Yes, it's wild. What, just when you think this book can't get wilder. And it's really interesting the way it talks about gender too, because at some point, Dan gets sort of bored of his relationship with Diane, and he says, like, "When I was fucking other Dans, I could be any role." You know what I mean? He doesn't use the terms top or bottom, but he means top or bottom or whatever. And he goes, "But with Diane, I'm always the man and she's always the woman. It's limiting." And I'm like, fuck, this is written in 1974. This is awesome.
What I mean, there's also what's funny about that is that, like, it that in itself is kind of sexist. It's like
Oh,
assuming,
yeah.
and
Yeah.
it's a very but that's a very like normalized attitude of like, oh well, when you're having heterosexual sex, there's just man is top, female is bottom, and I'm like, that's really boring. But that's what people like really think, and I yeah, so they fall in love,
Yeah.
and at first there's that what they're really into is more about the novelty. So it's like the novelty of having sex with yourself, but it has a different anatomy.
Right.
And then they get tired of that and they miss themselves, essentially, having sex with virgins. So, like, that's when you also learn that Diana was having sex with older versions of
Yes.
herself and same self. So it's like, I think even if I'm not mistaken, I think the older Diana that was mentioned was like Donna. So even using the same or similar names.
Yes, you're right. They're like, yeah, her version of the one who's ahead is Donna. I'm sorry, can I just read this really funny passage that I liked?
Yeah.
Today I destroyed the career of an archaeologist. Accidentally. I didn't mean to do it. A fellow named John Scheinenhaus, a chair at Columbia, had reported some very perplexing recent discoveries and half-jokingly referred to them as, quote, very convincing evidence of a practical joker with a time machine. It was the half that wasn't joking that concerns me. The recent discoveries he referred to were some rather unfortunate anachronisms, things I should have paid more attention to, things I left in the past, things that someone left in the past. I thought I'd be more careful, but apparently I wasn't. Or it wasn't me. One of the Pompeian artifacts in the British Museum has definitely been identified as a fossilized Coca-Cola bottle from Atlanta, Georgia bottling plant. So there's humor in it too. It really like it this is what I was saying before, like about how like it leads into the paradoxes. Like if you're the kind of person who, when it comes to Doctor Who or Back to the Future or any time travel or Terminator, any time travel stuff, and you're really interested in like that stuff. That's what it is. This book is chewing on all of that stuff, the rules and how it would work and how it couldn't work and different theories of how it might work. And it's so, I don't know. It's really fascinating. It's great.
Oh man, you know when you mentioned the Rick and Morty reference too,
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, that's more like alternate universes than timelines. But like that's theme that's brought up of like Rick and Morty being slightly different, making slightly different choices, and
Right.
there are even multiple episodes where you don't realize you're following a different version
Right, yes.
until later, until sometimes even like at the end of the episode or later. There's one actually really excellent episode, I think from season six, where Rick is alerted to, so like the show starts with the family at the dinner table and they're all having a nice time, and then these alien squid monsters just kill everybody. So you're watching the show that you're really used to, and then you're seeing the main characters get murdered. And then it cuts to another Rick's wristwatch going off, and he's like, uh-oh, someone killed the decoy family. And the whole family's like, decoy family? And that's when they realize that Rick created a bunch of versions of themselves to hide. But in
Yes.
essence, did you see that one? It's
Yes,
really
yes.
good.
Yeah. Well, I think the main difference is with in Rick and Morty, the alternate worlds are like really crazy worlds, like worlds where everybody's a chair, or worlds where pizza calls to order humans. Like in this, it's just like slightly different worlds where different choices were made, which led to a different Dan or Don.
Yeah, but I mean there's that, and then there is the those versions, like there's one version of the family that destroys their world. They go to another version of Earth and they're like, what's the difference with this one? And Rick is like, well, in this world, the only difference is Parmesan is pronounced Parmesian.
Yeah,
And they're like, oh shit, we have to get used to that. That's stupid. And then like that ends, but like the paradoxes of the squid dish, the clone families episode or the decoy episode is that they keep destroying themselves, and then it ends up being multiple loops of like, because they're Rick and Morty to an extent, they make the same choices. So they keep going and going. And then you're following the family, thinking you're following, okay, this is the right one. And then they die. And then again, it happens. The loop happens again and again and again with slight differences of like, okay, we're going to go here. Or our squid costume is going to be slightly worse. And it plays with that well. And in this story, I kind of wish we saw more versions, though, of Dan. Like, we did see a lot of versions of Dan, but they kind of, except for the female version, which that in itself is a paradox, and that's like the big moment in the book is when you realize that somehow along the way, Dan excised his own birth, and so that he himself is a paradox because he had sex with another version of himself. And then they reveal how what there's a female version and a male version. It's the female version created her own paradox where she went to a future of genetic changing and changed the sex of the baby. So it says became her own mother.
We didn't say that Diane and Dan get pregnant and have a kid. And in one version of reality, it's a boy. And then in another version of reality, she wants it to be a girl, so she changes it. She goes to a future where you can easily use science to change gender and makes it a girl. And then I guess we could go to the reveal at the end, which is at some point they break up and he takes his son. In this version, it's he has a son, and he goes to another time and place, and he like raises his son, and he decides to live in a straight line. He decides to just stay where he is. Now, this book was written in the 70s, so the time he picks is the 50s, but for I don't know why this book was rewritten in the early 2000s to include 9/11 and some references to 9/11. I don't know if you read this or
Oh,
anything.
I was confused by that, but
Yeah, they
okay.
updated it and added references to 9/11, and then they scaled up where he goes to live at the end, and they call it the 80s, but then he's talking about like the highway system being created, and it's like, well, that's not the 80s, that's the 50s. So it creates a problem within the text. But then he grows old as he's taking care of his son. And then he goes, and I started to call myself Jim. And you're like, shit, you're Uncle Jim. And then he gives his son the belt. He is his own father. He is his own son. His life is a complete, he is a paradox. His life is a circle.
Well, he's also his own mother. And then in the story,
Or
old
himself, and
Jim.
himself fucked and made him.
Right. But
But
that's
then
when
he
it
will
gets
grow up and
wild.
fuck. But he will then grow up and fuck another version of him. Well, like he talks about in the end, like, because the one thing that makes that's different in the end from the beginning is, in the beginning when he gets the time belt, he just gets the time belt. But in the end, he decides when he's old and he's gonna die, and I want to get into that whole part of the story. He decides not only to leave himself or his what he calls his son or nephew the time belt. He leaves him the diary. So he'll have more of a choice knowing where his life will go and all the crazy shit will happen. And he can maybe make different choices. So my question is, where does this end? Does it do can we assume that at some point eons in the future, or eons, well, time doesn't matter subjectively, but at some point in existence, he gets it right. At some point in existence, we get to a point where the older Don gives the younger Dan the diary, and that Dan decides, I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm not going to use the belt. And he just lives a normal life. Or is that not possible because he has to meet a female version of himself for him to be born?
That's where it gets confusing because in the text, right, and I know we're going to get to it, but older Dan goes back in time to meet Diane because he misses her and he's lonely and desperate, and she's so repulsed by old Dan, which also I'm starting to think old Dan is really more of like, again, like I keep thinking of the substance now of like the repulsion is that the older and your more own mortality, and Dan
Yeah, I don't
feels
think she's.
so.
Yeah, I don't think Diana is. Is it Diane or Diana? I keep saying both. I don't think she is just turned off by him physically. I think she's heartbroken that he left abruptly like he did, and I think she feels like if a younger version of him came back, that would mean he changed his mind sooner. But since this old man came back, that means he lived many, many years without her. And now, as he's getting towards the end of his life, he decides he comes back and he wants her. And I think that turns her off.
Well, yeah, I that too, but it's also the reason why I bring it up is because she's so turned off by him that she leaves, and that's before she gets pregnant. So in a sense, he kind of excised himself in a way because then she doesn't get pregnant, so she leaves, and because she leaves, there isn't
Wait,
that future
it's
where there's a
before she gets
Dan.
pregnant? I thought it was
I
after he
think,
left her.
well,
Although, wait,
the
they do
thing
talk
is,
about he keeps going back earlier and earlier, but she keeps getting younger, so it works even worse.
yeah, she keeps getting worse and she's repeatedly upset, and then it's the diary writing is assuming it's like, and then at some point she doesn't come back anymore, and I think a future version of Diane or Diana, whatever her name is,
Diana.
Diana told younger version, this creep is not going to leave you alone. And so does that mean that they never hook up? And if they don't hook up, then he is the ultimate paradox because he can't make it happen. And then if he can't make it happen, she doesn't take the baby, the fetus, and change the sex.
Okay, so remember in the middle where he starts to talk about how he sees less of himself and he feels lonely.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're thinking about all of the Happy New Year, everybody. If you're thinking about all of these timelines, if you think of them as like strands, right? And then like Dan's and Don's are blinking lights, like they it goes in waves depending on their behavior. When he gets to the point in the middle where he says there's not a lot, he's not seeing other versions of himself. Maybe a lot of them are making choices either on purpose or by accident to excise himself, and then like a wave, like a germ growing, he comes back again, and then towards the end of his life there's a lot of him again. But maybe as existence continues, there will come a point where all of the lights blink out. And like, 'cause even if he makes a paradox, right, where he makes it so Diane doesn't get pregnant, that's just another universe. There's still the universe where she did get pregnant, right? And then there's universes where it becomes Dan or Diane, because there's some worlds where the gender has changed and some worlds where it isn't.
Okay, so, but that's the thing too, is like I went to the hospital of my birth. Does that mean that he was never born? Or was there a version of Dan that actually had parents and then, because of all the looping, was excised?
I think that there probably wasn't a version of him that had parents.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. It's so hard, and it's funny because the book says multiple times that you can't help but think subjectively, but it's not subjective. You think you're going back and forth in time, but you're not. If you go back in time and change something, when you go back, you're in a different place than you were before you left, because that world is still existing without you, and now you've created a new one. That's really what's happening is you're just creating more strands, more timelines. It's like that episode of Community
Right.
with the eight-sided die, where
That was
Abed's
fun.
like, you know, by doing this, we're creating seven other existences.
That was a good episode too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's the worst timeline, which comes back a couple of times,
Right. Which
on
will
that
become a meme
show.
online, because people say
Yes.
we're living in the worst timeline.
There's also, though, like you asked the question, would we get to a point of where Dan doesn't use the belt? But I
Yeah.
think that has to also do with his own psychology, and because as soon as he gets the belt again, he goes back. Like, there's that mentality of, oh, I'm gonna keep, I can make it better this time.
Let
But it's
me.
like,
Yeah.
if you think
Yeah.
you can make it better by making different choices every time, does that mean you never reach a point of when you realize that you can't do anything and you stop?
Well, do you think that that is a peculiarity of the character we have, or do you think that the author is suggesting that, whether you call it Dan or whatever you want to call it, this is what any human would do? Any human would go down all these roads. Like in the part towards the middle where one Dan goes, I'm a god, and then that Dan gets locked up and called schizophrenic. And then they say, we're sure to, the rest of us Dans and Dons are sure to, whenever we come across a schizophrenic one, to take their belt away. I don't really think that's an aberration. I think you do this, you play this game enough, you time travel enough, you become schizophrenic.
Well, you have this like messiah complex, which he exhibits throughout the whole book. Like again, that goes back to that solipsism and narcissism talk we had, is like he thinks that he can make better choices. He thinks he's the only one, and he only interacts with other people very little in this book, but only to for his the means to his own end. So like, for example, Diana taking the baby to the future. Because she doesn't have that technology, obviously, but she knows other people do, where you could change the sex of a baby. Him talking to the lawyer to get his inheritance from Uncle Jim, which is just himself. I think it's more of the folly of getting to that point. I think it's the God complex. I think if any human being gets to a point of where they're so outside of reality and think that they're better than reality, that they're always going to make those choices.
So
Or
we agree. It's not this specific person, Dan, that if we can ascribe authorial intent here, the author's saying any human would do this. This is what happened to any one of us if we had this power.
I mean, I read enough science fiction, I wouldn't do that, but or I think I won't, but maybe I would, or maybe I think I'd do it better because I know, because I read fiction. Like, who knows? Those are the two big questions. If you had a time belt, right, would you do it to make different life choices?
What? I don't know. I feel like I wouldn't use it. I know that's. I'm not being noble. I'm just cowardly. I think I've always. My problem is I always act with an abundance of caution. But I don't know. Maybe I experiment with it a little bit, and it would build my confidence. Maybe it seems like the first thing they all do is figure out a way to make money. Maybe I would do that, and then once I had money, I would feel confident, and then I'd start fucking around. I was gonna say, I
Well,
have
he
a
is very
partner that I
lonely.
love, so I wouldn't wanna not have her in my life. I wouldn't wanna create a world where she doesn't exist. Like, I think it's essential that this character is basically a loner even before he starts time traveling.
Because the thing that's weird though is it kind of seems like in the beginning, Uncle Jim isn't really around, but sends him to college, which I wasn't sure if that meant that Uncle Jim was just financing his existence but not really interacting with him, or not. Like, I was confused by that. But I also wonder, like, the same question of like the time belt is like, I also have a partner that I love and I don't want anything to happen to them, but what if I take the time belt and I decide to make money off it? But making money to a point, it changes my personality, because that's what happens when you have, we don't have the constraints anymore. It changes you. And maybe that will repulse my partner and I won't have them anymore. Or I don't meet them for something or something weird like that, right? Like, we don't really know what that would be. Second question with the time belt though, Mike. Would you have sex with a version of yourself?
No, I don't think I would. I don't think I would. I mean, I listen to my own podcast sometimes, which is in many ways like masturbation. But I don't think I would. No, I don't think I would. Would
the
you?
the well, that's the thing that I've actually, before I even read this book again, it's an internet question, right? I was wondering about it. It's like, okay, I'm not really physically attracted to myself. However, I know my body more than anyone else. So, in that sense, if you're not physically attracted to yourself, but you know what gets you off, would you do the ultimate experiment of getting yourself off in a way that no one else really can because they don't know you as well as you know
I
yourself?
feel like I
And
have to
that's a
have the visual
question.
pleasure. Like, I have to, like, I don't find myself attractive. You know what I mean? So, even, but I don't know. Like, I feel like the more Dan travels in time, the more all of his subjective markers start to blur. His gender starts to blur, his orientation starts to blur, his age starts to blur. He loses track of his age very quickly. He's like, I don't know how old I am anymore. It all sort of starts to just become meaningless. So this is a side note. Have you ever seen Death Note, the anime?
Yes, but a long time ago.
It's about this person who he it's a classic anime. He gets this notebook where if you write a name in it, that person dies, and the kid starts writing names of like terrible people in it, and all the terrible people die, and then the kid sort of becomes an egomaniac, and it goes on and on and on. There's a part like that in this book. This is a quote. I read the news every day. I don't like seeing tragedies. I don't like plane crashes and murders and kidnappings and bizarre accidents. So they don't happen anymore. I go and I see and I fix. But then he says later on, the odd thing is, I don't do it because I care. I can't care. These people aren't real to me. They're pieces on the playing board. I just do it because it satisfies my sense of rightness, because it makes me feel a little bit more like a god to be doing something useful. So
Wild.
he loses real empathy too.
Well, I guess if you're so isolated from society, right? You lose so many tools that we take for granted. So yeah, like he basically loses all his humanity because he doesn't play and he doesn't have to play by the rules that we live by.
So this has been a good episode. I want to wrap it up talking about his death, because we get to a very interesting part in the book where, like I said, there's the big party and there's like different rooms with different age groups. And the older person room, at one point, a Dan shows up, and they talk about how actually time traveling, like, actually is like a bit of a physical, it hurts you physically, because you the space the air that was occupying the space you're in has to be pushed out or whatever. So this old version comes, and he's like out of breath and he's like sick, and the other older ones come to pick him up, and then there's a younger one there who's we're reading his writing. And he's like, I kept asking what's going on with them. And then the other old guys would go, never mind, you don't have to think about this yet. And they take that old man to a bed, and then a couple days later he dies. Or later he dies. And then I forget what happens, but he basically starts traveling looking for the person, the one who it's like he kills himself by looking for the day he died. He knows that he's going to die by traveling, and the travel being too hard for his body, and he dies, but he's also looking for it. And he talks about how Dans of other ages are also interested, because when he gets to the room where he sees the old man who pops in and then immediately starts feeling like sick, he says there's a bunch of Dans and Dans there waiting, as if they're waiting to see something. So there's a perverse, like, oh, they tell each other about the one that dies, and then they all want to see themselves die.
That's
It's
dark, man.
very like memento mori, like you did a weird satisfaction in seeing yourself die and seeking your death. But in seeking it, you create it, because he dies by traveling. His death wouldn't be triggered if not for the last time he travels.
You know, that's something I was also thinking about because when Dan gets the call at the very beginning of the story that Uncle Jim died, the lawyer tells him. This is one of the few, very, very few instances, or maybe even the only
I think
instance
it
of
is
Dan having
talking to
dialogue with,
with someone who's not one of himself.
right. And the lawyer says his maid found him, right? So, and I think that's supposed to kick off that cycle anyway. So it's like, did the Dans send dead Uncle Jim to a time period where the maid will find him so that they could report the death.
Or the maid could just be a Dan that we don't know. Like, you don't get the idea that Dan is close enough to his so-called uncle that he like knows the ins and outs of his everyday life. Perhaps the maid is another Dan. Fuck, maybe the lawyer is too. I mean, you figure he would recognize someone who looks like himself, but it does feel weird that like he's the only character that's not a Dan. It would be fascinating if this whole book there is only one character just talking to themselves over and over and over.
I kind of think of that scene from Being John Malkovich when Malkovich goes into the Malkovich hatch and is just in a restaurant on a date with himself, and everyone in the restaurant is Malkovich, and they're all just Malkoviches, all different versions of him doing different things. And then he gets to a point of like even the text and the speech is just Malkovich over and over again, and it's maddening. It drives Malkovich crazy. He loses his mind, and then he gets thrown out on the side of the highway because that's how that cycle works in that movie. But There's something kind of really, excuse me, frightening about it, whereas in this story, it's not frightening so much as being alone is the scariest thing for Dan.
Yes.
But he only pursues the same interaction. It's actually like the classic definition of insanity, of like you keep trying the same actions over and over again, expecting different results. And that's like what Dan is doing, is like even though they're slightly different actions, he's only pursuing himself over and over again.
Yeah. This is the last page. I saw him in his coffin. I sat through his funeral. He's dead, and he isn't. I could go looking for him. Should I? I want to reassure him and be reassured by him. And the tears roll down my cheeks. I'm crying for myself now more than him because now I know how truly isolated I really am. I am abandoned by the universe. There is no God who can save me. I am so alone I cannot bear the pain of it. Now I know how desperately isolated one human being can be. What have I done to deserve this? Surely I will go mad. And then it says, then there's like a beat, and it says, no, I will not. I can't escape that way either. I know what choice I have, and it is no choice at all. The decision is mine. A world awaits me. The future beckons. All right, I accept. I'm going to put on the belt. And that's the last line. I'm going to put on the belt. So even with the having read the diary and knowing what he's going to do, this version is like, I'm gonna fucking do it. Somebody, well, maybe I was saying before, maybe there's a point where he doesn't. Maybe that's a reality where the hospital where he's born isn't, if that makes sense.
But then it's also a question of we only know that he was born in the hospital when Dan tries to go back there and there's no hospital. But what if there never was a record of him being born? What if because Dan has infinite amounts of money, at some point he
Yeah.
created fake records of himself so that he could inherit that money because he inherits
Right.
something a little bit from Uncle Jim or whatever, or has the house in his name, or whatever bullshit. Like,
Well,
but that's the thing is, like,
yeah.
we don't know.
There's a weird thing in the beginning where his uncle's like, "You're worth millions of dollars. I'm the one who's taking care of your money that your parents left for you." And then when the uncle dies, the lawyer's like, "You're not worth any money. Your uncle was wrong." But then he goes and he bets on the ponies and he wins the money that the uncle said he had. I don't know. I feel like I could read this book 9 million. What I need is like a murder board. I need like to read the book a bunch of times and then like draw lines and like have like push pins and try to figure it out that way.
Well, that's another thing I'm wondering is like how did he write this in this way without losing it? 'Cause in the afterword of the story, David Gerald just writes about the hardest part for him was being open and writing about that gay scene, that gay sex scene,
Yeah.
right? And I was like, that's the hardest part? I mean, I guess at the time, yes, being openly gay was really challenging, but I'm talking about literally all these different Dans and different timelines and keeping the story up in a certain way. It's very bizarre.
Yeah.
And again, like you said, it's really
I
tricky.
don't know how you write something this brilliant. I don't know. I guess you just rewrite it a million zillion times. Or you know, you indulge in the uncertainty of it. You know what I mean? Like maybe he doesn't really know which Dan is doing which or which Don is doing which. It seems built into the very fabric of it of like there could be mistakes and questions that can't be answered.
Yeah, I think the most brilliant thing about this, and I can see where people would find it, like looking at the Highland story and that kind of, which that's the spoiler in that story, is the person is a paradox because they have sex with themselves and create themselves, so they're their own parents. But like,
Yeah.
whatever, people, the story's 50 years old. Get over it.
Okay.
So anyway, like, but that's the
In
thing
a
is
time
like.
paradox, we should end this episode by saying spoiler alert. Spoiler alert for what you just listened to.
Right. But I mean, like, what I'm getting at is like, what makes the story so brilliant is it's not just asking about time, it's asking about who am I and like exploring that in so many different ways and how he explores that kind
Yes.
of meta text.
Yeah.
And that is way more interesting than just like
Yeah.
killing Hitler or whatever bullshit.
Right. No, right, exactly. Time travel is, you know, and I have to say, The laziest, worst time travel in pop culture is from Marvel. The time travel in Avengers Endgame has completely no rules. There's no paradoxes. It's so stupid. It's so lazy. It's terrible.
So is that your like that's your review of that movie of just
No,
like
it's a certainly entertaining movie. It's a fun ride. It uses time travel. It doesn't at all grapple with some of the issues time travel might create for the writer. It just uses it to get back to places. And it's like, okay, well.
Well, I guess I take Marvel movies as like fast casual dining. It's like,
Sure, yeah.
yes. Yeah, we're at a Chili's and sure, we're eating. I don't even know what Chili's sells anymore. Like they all kind of seem the same. Like
Sizzling,
a
what do you call it? Fajitas.
Sure. Okay. Sure. F sizzling fa but like all of them have a version of fajitas or something.
Yeah,
It's
sure.
like what at one point they were like re resembling restaurants, like how Perkins resembles a diner or is a simulacrum of a diner. But then they keep expanding the menu, trying to get more clients or more customers, and they get to a point where they're all the same. So what I'm talking about is like a Marvel movie is like a fast casual restaurant. It's frozen. It's fried. It has salt and sugar enough that it's satiates that kind of I'm getting those beats, but there's nothing remotely interesting about it. You're not going for the experience, you're going because you wanted a burger, and there's a million of those restaurants.
And you
So
know it's always
those
going to be exactly
stories,
the same.
it's always the same and it's mediocre. So like expecting good writing from a Marvel movie is expecting a grill master burger at fucking Cheesecake Factory. I don't
Yeah. I'm reminded of a joke from a Family Guy episode, actually. They do a parody, The Lynch That Stole Christmas. And it's David Lynch crawls down a chimney, and it's actually voiced by David Lynch. And there's a little kid there who has a plate of cookies, and he goes, "Did you leave out a saucer of black coffee for me?" And the little kid's like, "No." And he's like, "In the future, leave out a saucer of black coffee. Also in the past." This has been
funny.
PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here with our friend Nadia Cater. Nadia, thank you so much for being here,
Thanks,
kicking off
Mike.
the
Good
new
bus.
year. Everyone, I'm gonna end the show by saying welcome to PCMC so you can listen to it in a circle. No, we end every episode by saying
Go bye bye.